Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So do you agree with Hillary Clinton that unaccompanied minors should be sent back to their country of origin? Yeah, Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton.
She's back.
Hillary Clinton, 2014, at least.
Two quick points. One, the numbers are increasing dramatically. And the main reason I believe why that's happening is that the violence in certain of those Central American countries is increasing dramatically. And there is not sufficient law enforcement or will on the part of the governments of those countries to try to deal with this exponential increase in violence, drug trafficking, the drug cartels. And many children are fleeing from that violence.
Should they be able to stay here? It's safer.
It may be safer, but that's not the answer.
Should they be sent back?
First of all, we have to provide the best emergency care we can provide. We have children 5 and 6 years old who have come up from Central America. We need to do more to provide border security in southern Mexico.
They should be sent back now.
Well, they should be sent back as soon as it can be determined who responsible adults and their families are, because there are concerns about whether all of them can be sent back. But I think all of them who can be should be reunited with their families. And just as Vice President Biden is doing today in Central America.
Yeah, so there you go. Do you agree with Hillary Clinton that they should be sent back? Do you agree with President Obama that children should be separated from their families? Well, I mean, that's what he did. Since 2008, the United States has had a policy known as the Alien Transfer Exit Program, or lateral repatriation, which focuses on detaining male migrants of Mexican descent. Once an immigrant is caught attempting to cross the border without documentation, they're detained, flown or bused across the United States, and then shown the exit at another segment of the U.S.-Mexico border, thousands of miles from their original port of entry. It's been described, or was described in detail, including anecdotal stories in the L.A. Times at the time. The Obama administration drastically increased the use of this program in 2011, responding to a perceived increase in attempts at immigration into the United States by Mexican nationals. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line.
Well, it's interesting because Hillary Clinton came out again yesterday with all the former first ladies. I love how they say the former living first ladies as if they're not dead. But Hillary Clinton came out and she's in agreement with Laura Bush, with Melania Trump, with Michelle Obama. And she wants this to stop.
Separating families is not mandated by law at all. That is an outright lie.
Mm.
And she took Jeff Sessions.
So she actually disagrees with the Hillary Clinton of a bygone era.
Yeah.
Isn't that always interesting, right? Because we don't have principles. We have shifting interests.
Well, politicians always change their interests. They do. I mean, think about it. President Obama, Hillary Clinton. Remember, they used to be against same-sex marriage. It was civil union.
Sure.
And then eventually they evolved into same-sex marriage because it helped with their constituency. But she did take Jeff Sessions to task because, and I wanted to play this yesterday, Jeff Sessions quoting the Bible when talking about separating parents from their children.
I would cite the Apostle Paul and his clear and wise command in Romans 13 to obey the laws of the government.
And did you hear him say that on Friday?
Yeah.
Sessions? All right, here's her response.
Those who selectively use the Bible to justify this cruelty are ignoring a central tenet of Christianity. Jesus said, "Suffer the little children unto me." He did not say, "Let the children suffer."
Yeah. all these newfound theologians like Hillary Clinton, not particularly compelling. And the last thing that we should be doing is having a Bible study with Jeff Sessions and Hillary Clinton on the issue, on the public policy issue. Just stick to the four corners of the public policy issue as it pertains to the rule of law. Let's just focus there. I mean, I understand there are biblical principles, Judeo-Christian values that undergird the legal foundations of this free society, but just stick on point. That's a distraction. And Hillary Clinton quoting the Bible, the only thing more shocking about her quoting the Bible than just the fact that she referenced it or got into this interpretive discussion with Sessions in absentia is that she didn't turn into a pillar of salt when she did so.
Stop it. But it bothered me. Laura Ingraham last night, I don't know if you watched her on her show, she compared these detention camps where kids are, they're in cages. They can only go outside 2 hours a day. They do get fed 3 square meals. Most of them are, you know, have little mattresses on the floor with Mylar blankets. But she compared it to summer camp. And you know what? Stop it.
Since more illegal immigrants are rushing the border, more kids are being separated from their parents and temporarily housed in what are essentially summer camps.
Summer camps? Laura Ingraham, they're not summer camps, because at summer camp, you know, at the end of 2 weeks, you're going to see your parents again. And these kids don't know when they're going to see their parents again, and they don't even know where their parents are. Some of them don't. Well, so, I mean, I think you kind of lose the argument when you make light of it like it's summer camp.
Rich Lowry, who we're going to have on a bit later in the show, made the point that that has been lost in the D.C. press corps coverage. The Trump administration not changing the rules that pertain to separating adult from the child. Not changing. There's been no rule change. Kristen Nielsen, Homeland Security Secretary, said the same.
She was busy yesterday.
Separation only happens if officials find that the adult is falsely claiming to be the child's parent or is a threat to the child or is put into criminal proceedings. And this is the rub. The past practice has been to give a free pass to an adult who's part of a family unit. The Trump policy is to prosecute the adult who's here illegally. That's the difference. So the separation policy isn't different. The enforcement of all component parts of the policy, no more free passes, that's what's different. And it is an issue, but it's also sort of simple, too, isn't it?
Why don't they just say what this is? They're separating parents from their children.
No,
as
that's
a
not
deterrent.
The simple part. That's one of the simple parts.
Because Kristen Nelson up there yesterday is like, no, we're not doing that.
But you have
Jeff Sessions and John Kelly both saying that that's what they're doing. It's a deterrent.
Well, it is a deterrent. There's no question it's a deterrent. And so the other thing that seems relatively straightforward to me is you don't want to be separated from your child. Turn around.
Oh, I know. Trust me. If I was trying to flee and I heard about this new policy, I would definitely turn around.
Well, that's what Mark Stein said, too. He was on with Tucker last night. And Mark Stein, oh, by the way, an immigrant.
Yeah.
Legal.
Well, which is it? This is a country that is supposedly on orange alert. Over half of the illegal aliens present broke into a country on orange alert. That is to say, they've come here since 9/11. Americans shuffle like a bovine herd through security that demands to know the consistency of their pumpkin pie if they're flying home to Thanksgiving from New York to Cleveland. But the rest of the world is entitled to walk across the Rio Grande if they happen to have a little moppet in tow with them. You can't have it both ways. Right now, Americans are living on orange alert if they make a domestic flight, but their borders are open. You're the chumps of the planet for going along with it.
Chumps of the planet. Steve in Kankakee, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
How are you doing this morning?
Good.
Well, my question is, what about all the danger the parents put their kids in on this trip up here? A lot of them are unattended. And second thing is, once they get in the country, why can't we put tracking bracelets on these people to find out where they're at?
Well,
they don't take off.
Yeah,
the problem is more than 40% of the people don't show up for their court dates, and so then they go to live. They you know, either with family members or try and start their own life.
Well, okay, yeah. I mean, just to his thing about the bracelets, a little Orwellian. They're not. If they're here illegally, they should be returned to their home country. They shouldn't be here illegally, and we're tracking them. We need to do a better job of
stick a dart in their neck.
We need to do a better job of enforcing visa overstayers.
Right.
It's just not that complicated. But yeah,
put a chip in them like we do our pets.
Steve and Roselle.
Oh, let me get this straight. It's okay to rip the kids from the parents, throw them on top of a train in the scorching heat, send them off to a foreign land, and give them the nice name of dreamers. But it's not okay to have the government obey the laws and send the children back with the parents in an air-conditioned bus.
Well, dreamers are here. Thanks, dreamers, Steve. Were kids that were brought here by their parents. Those are who the dreamers are. They, you know, when they were too young, they didn't have a say in what was going on, and that they're here.
Well, right.
Well, he was saying that their parents are shipping their kids. In some cases, I think that they are. They're telling their kids, go run across the border. But, yeah.
Joe in Hoffman Estates.
Morning. I was going to say, even if I'm going on a cruise, a $10,000 beautiful cruise with my wife and kids, and they tell me they're going to separate my kids for 8 hours until they interrogate everybody, I would not go on that cruise. So it's a great deterrent, the best.
Thanks.
Who the heck would come here unless they're evil?
Right. Thanks, Joe.
Well, unless they're seeking asylum.
Yes, but at the price of separating you from your children.
Oh, God, no.
I mean,
even watching this, it gives me panic attacks.
Anne in Chicago.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in Chicago, and I think I know what's going on.
Oh.
And I can't understand. I believe it's a decoy, these children. It's a distraction. Well, hundreds of people are coming every day in tractor trailers and in cars and everything else. So I think it's a distraction. And why are we importing marijuana growers and we're sending American companies out there? I think Mexico is getting richer, and they just don't want to deal with these people, the poor people in Mexico. And so, I mean, they have soccer, they have wealth, and they don't want to deal with these people.
Right.
So why do we have to deal with these people?
All right, thanks, Ann. Vince in Waukegan.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
You know, incarcerated in this country, you get separated from your children. No questions asked, you know. That's what happens. There's a lot of kids running across right now whose fathers or their mothers are in prison.
No, that's right.
So
yeah, that's
why
right.
Why is there any difference between that and an illegal immigrant?
Thanks for the call, Vince. Right, and in point of fact here, you broke the law in this country, but ultimately, if you're not granted asylum, we're ostensibly going to send you back with your children. So that's... Doesn't seem unreasonable.
The good news this morning, the two bills that are before Congress, both address kids being separated from their parents. Now we just need to get the Democrats to move on either of them.
Robert in Oak Brook.
Yeah, it's Amy, you hit it right on the nose. The Dreamer Act is going to be so difficult to write because what are you going to do? Because if you enact a sensible policy, what are you going to say? That only the children from 5 years ago should be allowed to stay? Or is it going to be the current children? Or is it going to be children 5 years from now? You understand how very difficult and very precise the wording would have to be? I agree with the Dream Act, but once you put that out into the world, you might as well just, you know, put a green light on the borders.
Well, thanks for the call, Robert. I mean, there's some specificity there. We're talking specifically about the DACA program and those that were given temporary status under DACA and in Trump's version, even a willingness to go further and say all those who could have gotten status under DACA, some including those who chose not to. So that's sort of the group that we're talking about when it comes to a DACA fix as part of the immigration reform legislation that's pending.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. Republicans, stand firm on the border. You are on the side of compassion. I'll explain when freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And, FBI and DOJ are on the clock to produce those documents that have been subpoenaed by Congress. Remember, we talked about that yesterday. Friday meet between Trey Gowdy and Devin Nunez and Paul Ryan with Christopher Wray, Rod Rosenstein, and other associated FBI and DOJ officials to get some clarity of what is going to be produced consistent with what has been subpoenaed. And when is that going to happen? If it doesn't start happening by midweek, according to House Intel Chairman Nunes, then there's going to be a price to be paid. They're talking about impeaching, moving to impeach Rod Rosenstein, openly talking about it. It's a rather remarkable time. And so against that backdrop, you have FBI Director Christopher Wray and Department of Justice Inspector General Michael Horowitz testify before the Senate yesterday against the backdrop of course, that bombshell of an IG report that was issued on Thursday by Horowitz, which was particularly devastating to Jim Comey and generally harmful to the reputation of the FBI. A number of important moments here, including Iowa Senator Charles Grassley asking Horowitz if the IG is investigating Comey's handling of memos about Trump, to which Horowitz replied in the affirmative that they are, that Comey, there's going to be a report issued on Comey. And remember, when the inspector general issues a report, he can also make a criminal referral. So wouldn't this be the height of delicious irony? Jim Comey bends the law to give Hillary Clinton a pass on improperly handling classified information. And then he gets prosecuted for improperly handling classified information. Wouldn't that be delicious? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Do you want Jim Comey to just go away, or do you want him to go away?
Oh,
you know what I mean?
What you're saying.
Yeah.
I'd like him to go away and to go away. But during that hearing yesterday, too, I watched some highlights of it. Horowitz, you know, they asked him about, is this in this report, did you discuss Russian collusion in the president?
We did not look into collusion questions.
And they asked about the credibility of Mueller.
You addressed the credibility of the investigation of Robert Mueller.
We did not address the credibility of the special counsel's investigation here.
Right, but importantly, there is a forthcoming report as well on Department of Justice and FBI with respect to the opening of the Trump-Russian collusion investigation. So that's yet another report that's forthcoming.
Right, and President Trump all along has said, you know, this is a witch hunt. And they asked Christopher Wray such question.
As I said before, I do not believe Special Counsel Mueller is on a witch hunt.
But Lindsey Graham, your favorite Republican senator, stuck up for President Trump.
These people hated Trump, and this investigation was anything but by the book.
So where do we go from here? So by the middle of the week, if the information isn't handed over, then there's talk of impeaching Rosenstein, or
yeah,
Rosenstein, whatever one you want to say.
They'll use the tools at their disposal in the House, but it's certainly going to get ratcheted up if there's not compliance. I suspect there will be, but Trey Gowdy and Paul Ryan have made pronouncements over the last several months expecting compliance that they clearly haven't gotten yet. And patience has run out, particularly because they have this newfound leverage with the Inspector General report. The other important point, and Andy McCarthy over at National Review caught this, one of the other important points, was Grassley asking Horowitz right out of the box whether it is improper to impose a deadline for the completion of an investigation based on the electoral calendar. And, of course, it is, because that, by definition, elevates politics over the law. Investigation shouldn't be driven by an electoral calendar. And McCarthy writes that it doesn't mean that an announcement about Mrs. Clinton's uncharged conduct should have been made at some other point, some other later point. That should have never been done. The government should not make an announcement that an investigation has been closed without charges, because, among other reasons, can always be reopened. And it should not make an announcement describing evidence in the case unless it formally charges someone with crimes. The political calendar should never dictate how long investigators have to complete an investigation, again, assuming good faith. case-related considerations should drive the timeline, not politics. And so the idea that the decision to wrap up the Hillary Clinton investigation in July of 2016 because you didn't want to have impact on the 2016 election, well, that's textbook Comey. Everything Comey has done over the last 2 years, as we've seen, is political positioning being superior to the rule of law. And this was, I think there was some clarity to some of these important instances, like having the electoral calendar drive his investigation, that were distilled by Horowitz in particular yesterday.
There's no political bias here.
Right. Dan in Libertyville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I've got to tell you, I could not be happier to hear what's happening to Comey. We've all known of these corrupt politicians and bureaucrats, officials here in Illinois, and I would like to see Comey put in cuffs, prosecuted, jailed, lose his pension, and the word get out to the FBI, you are no longer the untouchables.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this, though, Dan. I mean, you don't want the FBI to be shut down. You just don't want it to be driven by the political considerations. Is that fair?
Absolutely correct. I want the FBI to be an office of integrity, as they claim, and I want them to serve the U.S. public citizens, not their own interests.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dan. Chris in Woodstock, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I think what we're doing here is taking those texts out of context between Stroke and Page. Everyone assumes that they were so afraid that Trump was just going to win the election outright. I don't think that's what it was. I think they were afraid of all the criminal evidence of Hillary getting out. And Stroke's insurance policy was handing immunity out like candy and allowing for evidence to be destroyed. They were afraid this was going to get out about Hillary, and that's how Trump would win. And they were going to do everything they could to make sure that didn't happen.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Chris. Thanks for the call. I don't disagree that they acted with the belief that Hillary Clinton was going to be present. There's actually a text exchange to that effect. There's a text exchange where, on the one hand, Strzok, I think, initiates the conversation, but essentially,
they were worried, weren't they?
Essentially, you know, we need to be careful here. She could be the next president, which means they thought she was going to be the next president. We should be careful here.
Because, no, but they also said, too, we'll do whatever we can. We'll try and stop it. That's in well, reference to President Trump,
yeah.
Or then candidate Trump.
Yeah, that's right. But, I mean, I think the more interest, that the kind of like, you know, that's
are we going to redo Strzok and Page and recite their lines again?
We should do that. But
I'll be Strzok this time, you be Page.
The whole we're going to stop it, to me, is a little bit of, you know, kind of braggadocio, too.
Well, they think they're powerful.
You have to connect dots to some sort of explicit plan to use the law to prosecute Trump that's being initiated by Strzok, Page, or senior leadership at the FBI. I'm not sure we have that. But the Hillary Clinton thing is interesting because it also goes back to the Obama administration. And I think the mind's eye with so many of the senior leaders of Justice and FBI was she's going to win and then all this stuff is going to go away. I think that definitely influenced the way they were approaching the investigation, and just everything that had transpired from the end of the Obama administration through the campaign. I think they thought once she wins, we button this thing up and we move forward. And then something happened along the way. Mike in Bolingbrook.
Yeah, I just don't get it. I mean, I understand they have important questions to ask. A simple question. The Strzok guy, he's still working at the FBI, I guess, in human resources. Why are our tax dollars paying this guy? He's probably going to grab a $150,000, $200,000 pension. This jackass should be hung for treason, flat-out treason. He is the core of evil in the justice system.
All right, thanks.
I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for the call there. Hang him high, Mike.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. On Friday, the Tribune had a story about concealed carry permit holders involved in shootings in Illinois. Almost nothing is known about dozens of concealed carry shootings in Illinois.
Why?
Whoa. It's interesting that the need to continue to try to stigmatize guns.
No, they
gun
vilify
owners.
Them. Yeah, we're villains. We're the bad guys.
Illinois's got some data now because we've had right to carry in the state for just over 4 years. And this is important because, of course, the opponents of law-abiding citizens being able to protect themselves argued for decades and decades, still do, that you're going to turn this into the Wild West. Every traffic stop is going to be a shootout. And
every incident on the L is going to be a bloodbath.
People will be less safe. Well, 265,000 concealed carry permit holders, including me, in Illinois.
In the entire state. Okay.
So far, now that's a fraction of the overall number of FOID card holders, probably about, 10%.
Yeah, but I know people who are FOID card holders that don't own a firearm. They
right.
just do it to support.
Yeah. No one has been convicted of a crime with his permitted concealed carry, concealed handgun.
Okay.
Five individuals face charges. Four of them may have used the guns in self-defense.
Just four?
Yes. So in Illinois, there have been zero convictions for crimes committed with a permitted concealed handgun annually. 0.63 per 100,000 permit holders are charged with such a crime. So in point of fact, the experience, including states that have had right to carry for many, many years longer than Illinois, say like Florida, is that the law-abiding gun owners pre-concealed carry are still law-abiding gun owners post-concealed carry. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by John Lott, our friend, who, of course, is the president of the Crime Prevention Center, author of numerous books on this topic, including The War on Guns, More Guns, and Less Crime. John Lott, Jr., thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
It's great to talk to you guys again.
So it's fun to be able to make some assessments about Illinois now that we've had concealed carry for a few years, as I mentioned. And what we see in Illinois, I guess you would argue, is consistent with what we see nationally, which is sort of what I said, law-abiding gun owners are law-abiding gun owners, whether they're concealing or not.
Yeah, no, it's exactly the same. You look across the state, you find that people lose their permits for any firearms-related violation at thousands or tens of thousands of one percentage point. And even many of those are relatively trivial offenses, like somebody forgetting to have their permit with them when they're carrying, or accidentally walking into a gun-free zone. Not something that endangers anybody else, but it's just mistakes that people make every once in a while.
But
you seem to. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you finish your statement. Sorry for interrupting.
That's what you see in Illinois, as you say. There's for almost 4.5 years you've had permits issued in the state, and you have zero people that have been convicted of any crime being committed with their permanent concealed handgun so far.
And reading this Chicago Tribune article, too, I mean, it seems like the premise was to vilify gun owners and those with concealed carry. But in it, I mean, they're celebrating. They just state the facts. Here's a great example. At 8:30 p.m. on March 27th, a man from Mount Prospect was driving in the 700 block of North Clark Street. He saw three people attacking a man. The driver got out, walked toward the attackers, and they were all wearing surgical masks, and he pulled out his gun to scare them away. And the man had a concealed carry. So there's so many stories that I wasn't even aware of where people who own concealed carry or who have concealed carry permits are actually heroes.
Right. Look, using these types of media reports, you're going to find bad cases even much more easily than you're going to find the benefits. I mean, often if somebody just, you know, brandishes their gun and scares away the attackers, that's not going to get news coverage. But if you have a permit holder who's been charged with some type of violation, that's for sure going to get some type of coverage. And yet, as you say, you go through and read these cases, and, you know, virtually all the ones that you see there have something to do with self-defense.
I had the occasion to interview Maj Ture the other day, and you can get that interview at upstream-ideas.com, by the way. So he's the founder of this organization called Black Guns Matter, this high school dropout, former drug dealer from North Philly, who started this in Philadelphia, and now he was in Chicago this weekend. He's making his way around the country, and he's basically, the angle he's taking is to teach urban citizens, as he calls them, urban residents, but urban citizens, he focuses on that, how to be law-abiding, knowledgeable gun owners. And it's really interesting because he's very street smart, but he gets what the gun control proponents are trying to do, particularly as it relates to his community, black families, that gun control is people control. He completely gets that. And so he's sort of paying it forward with his awakening on this issue and on being able to protect yourself. And I wonder which... What your experience is in terms of making the kind of what is the end game of gun control proponents argument, or just focusing like you do at the Crime Prevention Research Center on the safety, the law abiding nature of the, you know, 99% plus of gun owners, which do you think moves the debate more quickly in the direction of the law abiding?
Well, just want to make a comment first, and that is, if my research convinces me of anything, there's certain groups of people who benefit much more from owning guns than others do, and those tend to be the people who are most likely to be victims of violent crime. Mm-hmm. And that is a fairly easily identifiable group, and that's poor blacks who live in high-crime urban areas. The other group of people who benefit the most are people who are relatively weaker physically, women and the elderly. Criminals like to go and target victims who are relatively easy for them to overpower. So I'm glad that he's doing the thing that he's doing there to encourage gun ownership by people who need protection the most. I mean, police are extremely important, but you know, I'm sure anybody in Chicago knows that, and I'm sure police generally know themselves. They virtually always arrive on the crime scene after the crimes occurred. And so the question is, what do you advise people to do when they're having to confront a criminal by themselves? And having a gun is by far the safest course of action. But, you know, with regard to the gun control, I guess over time I've come to believe, unfortunately, that the types of gun control regulations that get pushed, the real reason is just to try to disarm people. I'll give you a simple example. I can give you a dozen of these cases. In 2013, when Colorado was pushing these background checks on private transfers of guns, I got a call from some state legislators asking me what amendment I would put up. And my suggestion was to have an amendment that would exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay the new state tax that they were imposing on the transfer of guns. Well, with the exception of two pro-gun Democrats in the state house, every other Democrat voted against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay the new state tax. I'll give you another quick example. In Maryland, that same year, when they adopted licensing and registration of handguns, basically costing over $250 or so to go through the process, I suggested the same type of amendment to exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay those fees and taxes. The Democrats, who control more than two-thirds of both the state House and the state Senate, wouldn't even let that amendment come up for a vote. I mean, how many taxes and fees can you think of the Democrats will fight tooth and nail against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's right. So it's just part of the orthodoxy. And until there's a sort of an independent, clean break from that line of thinking, particularly in urban centers, they'll keep promoting it because it's politically advantageous to do so, to blame guns and to blame, you know, it's boogeyman politics. So that to me, Maj Ture, and what he's doing is sort of our best hope, but somewhat ironically, but you got to have people with credibility in those communities, you know, offer a different way of thinking.
Right. I mean, look at Illinois. To get a concealed carry permit in Illinois, you have to pay a $150 fee, and then you have to go and get 16 hours of training, which can run another $300. At least $250 or so. And then, I mean, who do they think they're excluding by having those incredibly high costs to go and get a concealed carry permit? It's not wealthy whites who live in the suburb. It's basically poor blacks, poor minorities who they're stopping from getting permits. And then, you know, you live in Chicago. There's no training facilities in Chicago.
No.
You have to travel outside.
Right.
You're not allowed in Illinois to carry even permanent concealed handguns on public transportation.
Right.
So it's kind of like they've gone through and checked off all the boxes. It's, you know, it's costly. You know, we make it difficult for people to be able to go and get the training so they can go and get the license. If you live in Chicago, you're going to have to borrow a car or something to be able to go out to the suburbs to be able to go and get the training. And you're going to have to do it on multiple days.
Well, and
you're not going to be able to get 16 hours of training in one day.
Well, in addition to that, right, in Chicago, you basically can't conceal carry. I mean, you're within X number of feet of a bar, restaurant,
school,
a park, school,
a church.
In addition to, of course, all the unfriendly, you know, kind of gun crossed out buildings. I mean, basically can just carry when you're driving around in your car in Chicago. That's about it, really.
Right.
And also, too, I mean, think about public transportation. We have had so many robberies, even some rapes on CTA trains, whether it's a red line,
right,
purple line, orange line, pink line. And that's the place the most where people need to conceal carry.
Yeah, I mean, you have some woman who has to work late at night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not just on the trains. It's also going to and from them. Because if you ban them being able to go and carry on the trains, then you ban them be able to go to and from those trains,
yeah,
too.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. John Lott, president of the Crime Prevention Center, author of a number of books, including The War on Guns, More Guns, Less Crime. Make sure to check his website, crimeresearch.org, for updated information about this topic, concealed carry permit holders, as well as many others in this topic area. John Law, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great talking to you. Thanks.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Yeah. Isn't this lovely? Oh, sports of Tay Dan. Meghan Markle's father spoke to ITV. He was paid for the interview, just so you know. And he said some interesting information about the royal family. First, you know, he feels bad he missed the wedding because he allegedly had heart surgery.
The unfortunate thing for me now is that I'm a footnote in one of the greatest moments in history.
And why he really...
Well, you were going to be a footnote anyway.
Why?
Whether you were physically there or not. I mean, what was the difference?
Well, he didn't go to the wedding because he tried to sell... Well, he did sell photos to the tabloids. They had pictures of him, you know, on the computer at a coffee shop looking at pictures of Meghan and Harry. I didn't think it was that big of a deal.
Tell the royal family
to
take the stick out of their ass. What's the big deal?
Well, because Princess Diana died because of the paparazzi.
Oh, for goodness
sakes. And then when after she was dead, they didn't help her. They took pictures of her bleeding
out.
He
wasn't in a car. He was like, at a desk and stuff.
Yeah, in a coffee shop.
It wasn't dangerous.
Still feels bad about it.
I feel bad about it. I apologize for it. And that's all I can do.
So the burning question, how did you feel? He had to watch the royal
wedding.
There
are no burning questions.
From his home in California. And he had to watch another man, Prince Charles, who's going to be the king, walk his daughter, his precious baby, down the aisle.
I can't think of a better replacement than someone like Prince Charles.
Oh, yeah.
I was jealous.
Exactly.
I wish I'd been there. I wish it had been me.
I would have picked the dude that Prince Charles is married to.
Oh, Camilla, will you stop it? You're so mean. But this is the part that's making the headlines, because the royal family.
He's my second dad.
Come here, backup daddy. Come here.
You know what she should have done?
What?
She should have had Tommy Fleetwood walk her down the aisle.
That,
now, there's a local hero, Prince Charles. Give
well,
me a break.
Royal figures are scrupulously careful. They don't comment on public or domestic or international political affairs, don't you know?
Yeah.
But they did get into politics because Meghan Markle's dad has spoken on the phone several times with Prince Harry.
We've had interesting conversations on the phone. I was complaining I didn't like Donald Trump. He said give Donald Trump a chance.
Excuse me? Give Donald Trump a chance.
What a riveting conversation. Boy, well, I wish I would have been on the party line.
Well, also, During that conversation, he asked him if he could have his daughter's hand in marriage, and of course he said yes. It was very exciting. Are you learning anything?
Oh, my gosh.
Boring!
Is it time to go to the news yet?
No, I'm not done, okay? He is happy for the royal couple.
Love them dearly. I have a new, I have a new son-in-law. I'm very happy to have a new son-in-law.
Now, is he also going to be punished for doing this interview and not allowed to, you know,
ever go to visit the royal family or to meet Prince Charles?
Right.
I don't know.
Celebrate,
I mean,
Guy Fawkes Day or something. He's not going to be invited.
Well, Harry's press office declined to comment on this television interview, which again he was paid for. And his daughter, they have no comment. But right now, Meghan Markle is traveling with Queen Elizabeth, making appearances together.
Yeah.
How do you don't care at all?
Are they doing like a mall tour like Debbie Gibson in the 80s? What are they doing?
They're just going around the countryside.
Yeah. We're here.
Have a party.
Yeah. We're and fawn on fawn all over us now.
Okay. He also asked him about Brexit.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously? Come on. That clock needs to move faster. Mike Scott, bail us out.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity. Right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, I don't want to exaggerate the importance of this incident. So let me just say this.
Yes.
Indiana State Trooper Sergeant Stephen Wheels is the greatest human being who ever lived.
What he did yesterday, and he tweeted about it, I stopped this. So it's a picture of him on the side of the highway on I-65, and there's a car in front of him. He's blocking the license plate so that that person doesn't get harassed. I stopped this vehicle today for a left lane violation on I-65. The driver had approximately 20 cars slowed behind her because she would not move back to the right lane. Again, if there are vehicles behind you, you must move to the right lane to allow them to pass. Apparently, the speed limit there is 70 miles per hour. She was going an annoying 50 miles per hour.
She might as well have been just parked.
I mean, seriously. But then all these cars were piled up behind her because nobody could move. Because she created a backlog.
Well, that's some bad driving. I mean, if
it is Indiana.
I mean,
sorry, Hoosiers, but
like if you're backed up that much, you can't, you know, use the shoulder, go up on two wheels. You figure a way around any sort of backs up, or you weave in and out in the middle lanes,
drive into the grass medium, and then
but no, this shouldn't have been a citation. It should have been an arrest.
Oh, that. Oh,
as you know, this is my driving slow in a left lane, as well as pacing.
Oh, pacing! I can't stand
You know, boxing in, right?
Yes,
that boxing in the citizen police that box you in. Those are the only crimes for which I believe the death penalty should be eligible.
You're against capital punishment.
Right. Except for those two crimes.
Everybody all around the nation, he's being praised. Appreciation for the trooper coming in from as far away as Hawaii. People asking the Sergeant Stephen Wheels, that's his name, to transfer to Florida, Arizona, and the Aloha State. They want him to work there.
IndyCar driver Graham Rahal. Calling him his hero. Fast lane cruisers are one of my biggest frustrations. Well, yeah, you're an IndyCar driver. But yeah,
and they wrote nice work.
Yeah. I mean, it's this is an important moment. There is actually, I mean, it's not that there's not the law there that cops shouldn't do it. You know, they're always just trying to catch speeders like me, which is, of course, discriminatory and hateful.
Oh, why?
That's
oh,
a hate
because
crime.
You're a white male in a Mercedes?
It's a hate crime.
Oh, you're being targeted wrongfully.
Yeah, I'm being racial.
You're being racially profiled.
I'm not being racially profiled. I'm being profiled by my speed. But I just use profiled, and it sounds mean.
Right.
It sounds illegitimate. Why not spend more time going after the left laners, the pacers, who are the defensive drivers who are much more likely to cause an accident than a sophisticated driver like Graham Rahal or me?
Indiana in 2015 passed what's called the slowpoke law. And if the driver does not move out of the left lane and goes below the speed limit of more than 20 per miles per hour, they could get a fine of $500. And we don't know if that happened in this case with that driver, but it should. Do we have a slowpoke law here in Illinois?
Yeah, we have a slowpoke law.
We do?
Yeah, I think it's been around for a while.
Why don't...
Yeah, right, exactly.
Why doesn't anyone use it? 312-642-5600. Yeah. Any police officers out there?
Particularly the ones that pulled me over. Come on, Elk Grove Village boy. How about State Trooper guy on I-90? Come on.
I was thinking about this yesterday. I think I have met every single Elk Grove Village police officer.
Yeah.
I got pulled over one time because I had my cell phone on my lap. On my lap. And I said, but I'm not on it. And I have a headpiece on. They said, no, ma'am, it has to be in the other seat or in your purse or on the console. Yeah, like, why are you looking into my car? And why are you looking there? I'm being profiled.
This state trooper, I mean, he prevented other crimes, too. He didn't just bring this driver to justice. He prevented other crimes. It means highly likely
that there would have been a road rage incident.
Oh, yeah. I mean, somebody's going to shoot out her tires. And I assume it's a her.
Troy Aikman. Finally. This is what he tweeted. Finally. !! And a thumbs up. This has gotten 75,000 and growing likes. Or 76,000 now. Excuse me. I've liked it. Now I'm following the trooper, Sergeant Stephen Wheel. Somebody also on social media wants him to be nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, that seems fair. I don't think that's too much.
A Nobel Peace Prize. Well, more than President Obama, right?
Yes, he's lived up to his potential. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. You can comment on either question. What should be done to further punish this driver to make an example of her? And again, I'm assuming it's a her.
No, it is a her. Is she?
There you go.
Okay, you know what? Men do it too.
Or what kind of awards should be given to State Trooper Sergeant Stephen Wheels? I mean, you know, this is somebody that needs to be celebrated and elevated.
He's currently stationed at the Indiana State Police in southeastern Indiana. Maybe he can move up to Indianapolis.
It's time for
maybe he can move to Chicago.
Time for a promotion. Who will play Sergeant Stephen Wheels in the movie about this story? Look at here. Our friend David Hochberg has a comment on the slowpoke law. David?
Hey, you could shave $1 billion off the state budget deficit by parking a state trooper on the Edens every morning.
Amen.
1,000 tickets for all the knuckleheads in the left lane driving 50 miles an hour. Drives me crazy.
There you go. Thanks for the call, David. I mean, you can tell it's driving him crazy. He's still crazy.
He's still hot under the collar. No, he's hot under the collar. Edens, you have the worst offenders. But also, the Kennedy in the morning, it's the taxi cab drivers and the Uber drivers that they sit there in the left lane. And I'm sick of it. I don't ever think that I have any road rage possibilities in me, but I get really upset. if you know what I mean.
No, it's absurd. And by the
way, I beep and I flash my lights now. That's
I also think
I
there are certain
get
makes
out of my lane.
There are certain makes and models of cars that should be discontinued, or those drivers should not be allowed to drive anymore. Their privileges, because that's what driving is—a privilege, not a right. Their privileges should be broke or should be revoked. So if you're in one of those
yes.
little Volvo square boxes, or
all
you're
those smart cars,
you're driving.
I couldn't even fit in one of those.
You're driving a Subaru Outback.
Oh, come on. What about a Jetta? Volkswagen Jetta? Lincoln Park Trixies?
Well, just stay in Lincoln Park. Mark and Joliet.
Hey, good morning, Amy and Dan. If somebody's cruising the left lane, there should be a law that allows you to NASCAR them.
Yeah.
Get them in the back corner and spin them right into the wall.
Days of Thunder? Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for the call, Mark. Totally agree. Completely agree. Larry and Bartlett.
Hey, good morning. I'm going to get his name wrong because I can never say it. But right after Brad got elected, he was caught in a traffic backup. And it was like 2 months after that, the law for slowpoke was passed in Illinois because he was so frustrated, even with a state police driver. So Brad actually did something good in his terms.
All right, there you go.
So he started the slowpoke law.
Thanks for
here.
The call, Larry. All
it's
right.
also called the move over law.
Now,
we're in Chicago, we're like, move over!
Now I'm... it's also called the go frack yourself
yeah.
law.
go frack yourself.
Now I'm for Rod's commutation.
Okay. Well, it's coming, so just brace yourself. We don't know when, but yes.
Paul in New Lenox. Chicago's morning.
Hey,
answer.
Guys, great show. I think that he needs to have a special car. It should look like the one that Mel Gibson drove in The Road Warrior. Good show.
Thanks
later.
For the call. We should have like Road Warrior urban assault vehicles just to punish people who are driving. Basically, I mean, if I had my way, anybody who's driving under 90.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is the left lane. It doesn't matter.
If
Chuck Yeager is behind you, then move over.
Move over.
It doesn't matter how fast somebody's going. George and Monique, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan, the cops are not going far enough. This woman should have her children taken away because
we've got to cut the cycle. Yeah, it's true. Thanks for the call, George. It's a good point because this has passed from one generation to the other.
Mm-hmm. Kids do watch how you drive. They do learn from this.
Somebody's got to be made an example of. Mark in Des Plaines.
You guys are taking the completely wrong tack on this. You know, drivers in this area are ridiculous. Nobody follows the laws. They don't follow the laws anywhere in the country. That's why we're never going to have self-driving cars, because if the only way that self-driving cars would ever work is if everyone, you know, were in one and everyone were following the laws. I mean, you know, the things that I see every day, you guys, you would not believe.
All right, what's the worst thing you've seen?
Oh, my gosh, at the corner of Lakeshore and, Michigan, you know, where they come together there, right where you enter the
Mag Mile.
Yeah, where you enter Lakeshore Drive North, you know, the 41 fast, you know, from, anyway, right there, you know, some idiot, you know, turns left and he right before my eyes, you know, it was like an explosion, these two cars impacting. You know, look, these cars all cost nothing less than $25,000, you know, today. I mean, unless you're getting one of those stupid little weird things that they have out there now.
Or a 25-year-old jalopy.
So, or whatever, but, you know, the point is, you know, what's the world coming to when what needs to happen is consideration for others, you know, like love for your fellow man, right?
Yeah, absolutely not.
That? Is that wrong? That,
absolutely. I mean, that is ridiculous.
The golden rule. That isn't ridiculous.
Thanks for the comment. That is outrageous. No consideration on the roads for your other men. Maybe in other settings, but not in the left lane. The left lane is a Hobbesian state of nature. It is, you know, kill or be killed. In the left lane.
No, move it. Move it or lose it. Honestly.
I'm sorry. That's no.
And that's when you get the horn and the brights. That's what I do now, and I'm not apologizing for it.
There is no golden rule in the left lane.
Get your butt out of the left lane.
That's just,
I see you sometimes, and I see you coming, and then I'm in the left lane, and then I get in the middle because I know you're going to blow by my used minivan.
I mean, I'll knock you off the road if I need to.
Well, then I feel my car kind of shake when you drive by.
Yeah, exactly.
Burst of energy.
Joe in Cal City.
Yes, good morning. This is a first-time caller.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with going at the speed limit in the left lane?
No, you can go the speed limit in the right lane. The left lane is made for...
No, ma'am, my question is, I've been on the road many years, okay? Yeah. I'm 75 years old.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hot rod people out there that are causing all kinds of upset. I travel to work on a road that has potholes in different places. I try and avoid the potholes. I get in the left lane. I might be 5 to 6 miles over the limit, and people are trying to... flashing their lights. I'm trying to avoid potholes and things like that. My question is, what's wrong with traveling the speed limit?
Well, I mean...
is there a problem with traveling the speed limit?
Well, in the left lane, there is, if somebody's going
faster.
Well,
why? Because does it say that you have to go 90 miles an hour in the left lane?
It's not about how fast you have to go. It's that the left...
Well, people are going by me at 80 miles an hour
well,
in the 55 zone.
I know. I'm one of them. The left lane
is that against the law?
It is. It is, but the left lane is a passing lane.
Okay, fine. I understand that.
Yeah, that's
but
all.
But when people are going 80, 85, 90 miles an hour in the left lane, that's against the law.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Yeah, it is.
I mean, the sergeant did remind people it is not, you cannot speed, but the left lane is intended for passing.
That's right.
Now this segment's getting serious, and we can't laugh anymore.
Potholes. Look, you know.
I don't want. I try to avoid potholes, and we all know where the potholes are on Compound Kennedy and near Bryn Mawr. There, you don't want to break your axle or have to get a new tire.
But that's consistent with the whole road warrior nature, the Thunderdome nature of driving in the left lane in Chicago in general. You got your gunfire. You got your potholes. You got Joe in the left lane doing 57.
No, he's going the speed limit. Let's not make fun of him.
No, I understand. And I appreciate it. First time caller.
Yeah, this is Joe, thanks for calling.
Interesting how this topic beats people out of the weeds. He's very upset about that because driving is this personal thing.
We all do it.
And take it seriously.
Yes, we do. Get out of the left lane.
And get off my lawn, too, while you're at it. Anthony in Plainfield.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Everybody knows the left lane is the warp speed lane, and if you want to enjoy the countryside, get in the right lane and drive 40 miles an hour.
That's right. This isn't driving Miss Daisy out there. Thanks for the call, Anthony.
I feel the need for speed.
Ow! Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Welcome to the sixth branch of the U.S. military, Donald Trump's Space Force announced yesterday.
When it comes to defending America, it is not enough to merely have an American presence in space. We must have American dominance in space. So important. Very importantly, I'm hereby directing the Department of Defense and Pentagon to immediately begin the process necessary to establish a space force as the sixth branch of the armed forces. That's a big statement. We are going to have the Air Force and we are going to have the Space Force, separate but equal. It is going to be something so important. General Dunford, if you would carry that assignment out, I would be very greatly honored also. Where's General Dunford?
Hey, where'd you go?
Hey, where'd you go? Hey, you. Come here.
Yeah.
Come on.
Got it. Okay. Let's go get it, General.
Let's go do it. Let's go do it. We're boldly going where no man has gone before.
We're going to Space Force. It reminds me of Mel Brooks' Spaceballs. Remember that? You know, the...
There is... it is the final frontier. It is the final frontier.
Okay, thank
space.
You.
Just so we're establishing, baseline here.
Is this needed? 312-642-5600?
Needed? No. We're past that.
Oh.
Who is going to command President Trump's Space Force? That's the question.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, not a quick comment.
You just heard him. I mean, he called Dumfer and said, this is done.
Get up here. Where is he? Where's that little rascal? Get up here.
We're ready to launch.
Can't stop.
So you mentioned one nominee, I would say, that should be under consideration, Dark Helmet.
Prepare ship for light speed.
No, light speed is too slow.
Light speed too slow?
Yes, we're going to have to go right to ludicrous speed.
Ludicrous speed? Sir, we've never gone that fast before. I don't know if the ship can take it.
What's the matter, Colonel Sanders? Chicken?
There you go. Some of Mel Brooks' best work. Steve on 88 suggests Michael Jordan.
Oh, yeah, because Space Jam
Bingo.
Could easily translate into Space Force.
Uh-huh. I think you have to consider somebody that you know.
Who?
You've flown on the good ship Adama, haven't you? Admiral Adama, okay. Commander of Battlestar Galactica.
This is the Admiral. All hands, brace for turbulence.
Is that the line he used on you?
Before he shoved his tongue down my throat. Oh, come
gross.
On. No,
jeez.
Come on. I wasn't expecting it either.
I would, and I'll tell you what, I'll give everybody anybody who understands this reference, who knows this reference, okay. My unyielding
what?
Admiration.
Oh, and that's so important.
You can't put a price on that.
No, you can't.
You want a T-shirt? Or do you want my unyielding admiration? A Captain Malcolm Reynolds.
Oh.
I think it's got to. Do you know who that is?
I'm looking it up right now.
I'll be impressed.
I'm still embarrassed.
I'll be impressed if anybody
James
gets it.
James Olmos.
He was, you know, he did. He did.
Stop. Who? What? Who are we ending up?
I mean, back in the Castillo days of Vice, I could understand it.
Oh, my God. Can you just. Talking about it.
So here's the thing. I think it should be somebody who has played it shouldn't be an actual astronaut or actual general. It should be somebody who's just played one on TV.
And who was that last person you suggested, Captain?
Malcolm Reynolds.
Reynolds.
Bob in Buffalo Grove, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Thanks for taking my call, Dan and Amy. I'm going to go back to my childhood before you guys were even born. Either Captain Video or Captain Midnight.
Oh, boy.
In that goes back to the early 50s.
I've got somebody.
Kids program.
Captain Video and his Video Rangers, yeah.
Yep, and then also Captain Midnight.
All right. Thanks for the call, Bob.
I got one. Flash Gordon.
Yeah, okay.
Wasn't he in Ted 2? Well, he was in Ted, the character who played Flash Gordon. And not that you saw Ted or
yeah,
Ted 2.
I did see them. Yeah.
They were funny.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Okay.
Thunder Buddies.
Tom and Deer Park.
Hi, good morning. I lack the cultural references to be of assistance on this segment. The Star Wars, Star Trek, not my thing. But I'm an old enough conservative to remember when we used to be in favor of limited government, against taxes and, you know, fraud and waste. But you know what? Sign me up. Sign me on. I'm probably too old to be a member of the Corps, but I'm willing to spend and waste my tax dollars on the great President Trump's latest idea, and I'm totally on board.
Final frontier, Tom. Thanks for the call.
Well, the Air Force already has a division called Space Command.
Yeah.
So why do we need a space force?
Nobody is suggesting James Tiberius Kirk. Wow.
So if you sign up for the
Space
Force.
How the mighty have fallen.
I mean, then can you get free college later on if you, you know, commit to Space Force for 2 years? Then will the government pay for your higher education?
Do you need
letters? Is it just like the Army or the Navy, Air Force, Marines,
Getting into West Point. So do you need, like, letters from your senators, for your home state senators to get into Space Force? Hmm. Kurt in Bolingbrook.
Hey, Dan. Now, I like Trump, but maybe he was up late at night watching the end of Moonraker where he got the idea of the Space Force.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good reference.
They opened up the shuttle, which we don't have anymore, but out come the troops with the lasers shooting at each other.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Kurt. Also, there's a great old, like, terrible movie that was parodied on MST3K. That's Mystery Science Theater 3000 for the layman.
Wow, you are such a nerd.
Teenagers from Outer Space.
Oh.
That was pretty good.
God, that's digging deep.
Somebody, Monica on Twitter got my Malcolm.
Yeah, it's a guy from Firefly, right?
Well, you looked it up. That doesn't
count. No, I didn't look it up. Keith Conrad texted it to me.
That's the same thing. Malcolm, our very good Monica on Twitter, who got it without looking it up, I presume.
Was that a great series or something?
That was pretty good.
That's a guy from Castles.
From Castle, singular.
Castle. Yeah. Castle.
Yeah. Nathan Fillion.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, do I have a poster in my room? Maybe. Eric in Crystal Lake, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, wasn't it President Reagan's Star Wars program that ended the Cold War with Russia?
I don't know that it was the idea of Star Wars exclusively, but it certainly was the arms race combined with the internal contradictions of the Soviet Union that ended the Cold War, yeah. So we're not allowed to make fun of Trump? Is that what you're saying? Come on, Eric. Thanks for the call. Lighten up.
I mean,
I got a tweet from Kevin Rooney too. Do you think President Xi of China is laughing about the Space Force? I don't.
President Xi right now is with Kim Jong Un.
And I do think he's giggling about it. Maybe not full belly laugh.
Well,
maybe
do you
a little
Putin's
giggle.
Giggling about it.
He'd be giggling at this segment if people would lighten up.
Well, where is the home base going to be? You know, I mean, we need to know.
Space station.
A doll, Amy.
Or it'll be on Mars, where Sheila Jackson Lee thinks Neil Armstrong planted an American flag. Jay in Highland, Indiana.
Morning, Dan and Amy. Pleasure to speak with you again. Let me play devil's advocate. Let's think about this seriously for a second. Granted, we all see little green men bouncing around in spacecraft and stuff when we think about a space force, but let's be realistic about it. With the amount of equipment and money that we have tied up in space, not to mention the security component of it, might not be a bad idea to have some sort of defense. So when Dan's brother Elon Musk has a spaceship that goes up there, somebody hijacks our satellite down with rockets, we can do something to deter that.
There you go. There you go.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Well, if it's to protect Elon Musk, then of course I'm in, obviously. Well, and also, too, I mean, we still need to rescue George Clooney from space.
Oh, in that
gravity.
That? Gravity.
Yeah.
Julia Roberts got back, right?
Sandra Bullock
was
in that movie. I don't know if Julia Roberts did get back. I don't know. You mean from that whatever the plantation or from Osage County are you talking about? Is that Zach in Downers Grove?
You know, you go to all these sporting events and other events and they have the recruitment booths for the military. I was just wondering if the next booth for Space Force was going to be at Comic-Con.
That is a great idea. There's a large pool, you know, of talent there that you could recruit.
There's no question. Thanks for the call, Zach. Matt in Fox River Grove.
Yeah, it's got to be Christopher Lloyd.
Oh,
Doc,
sure.
Space Force Commander. He'd be awesome.
Thank you, Matt. That's a good one.
Got a text message here. This Space Force makes perfect sense. A military force that could knock out enemy satellites seems like a great idea.
Yeah, fine. You just play along. Stop being so serious. Why are you always so serious?
Yeah, right.
Diane in Kankakee.
I was thinking we could revive Dr. Smith in the characters from Lost in Space.
Yeah, that's a good one. Actually, they have been revived, right? There's a Netflix series now.
Yeah, and the little kids from Blaine Elementary.
Oh, thanks for the call, Diane. Appreciate
moved
it.
Moved up to Toronto.
Really?
There's not all the little, yeah.
Why didn't Peyton or Eli get that gig?
Because I'm not one of those moms pushing them into the arts.
Yeah.
I keep them on the courts.
You're not
ball
one of
the, in their hand.
You're not one of those moms like the Blaine kid in Lost in Space who wants to retire.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Yeah, talking about who should head up Trump's Space Force that he so designated yesterday. And a lot of suggestions coming in. I'm glad that I get most of the references. It ensures my geek status. what was the?
I have one. Jeff Bloom from Independence Day.
Independence Day, terrible.
I saw that movie.
Tweet from Jeffrey Tompkins. Zap Brannigan. That's Futurama. That's a cartoon, though. You need an actor. From Steve on 88, Slim Pickens, of course, King Kong from Dr. Strangelove, but Slim Pickens has been dead for 35 years.
Oh, it's too soon. Yeah.
Tweet from Silverback Marketing, Chewbacca. I know what you want. That's pretty good. Oh, the tongue roll. Wait, hold on a second. Let's hear Chewbacca. I hear you. It's not bad.
Thank you. I've been practicing for years.
I don't know if
decades.
Your Chewbacca and your Melania are pretty good. It's weird. It's a weird
party
talent.
Party animals.
Jack and Long Grove, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi. I remember when the Army Air Corps split off and became the Air Force, and then they created the Air Force Academy. So does this mean that we're going to have the Space Academy?
Yes.
And we will have space cadets, of which the U.S. is amply supplied.
And they'll all be blondes.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Jack.
Well, here's a low-hanging fruit. William Shatner. Hello.
Captain James Tiberius Kirk has been called. I'm sorry, you don't know that they're the same person.
I'm a space cadet, and I'll fit in perfectly.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Coming up next, it's me, Mike Gallagher, right after Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The nice thing about Hillary Clinton being around as long as she's been around is you can almost track the descent of the Democrat Party into cultural Marxist madness just by listening to her pronouncements over the years as she modulates her positions to keep with the times in pursuit of power. Hillary Clinton in 2003 on immigration.
I am, you know, adamantly against illegal immigrants. Certainly, we've got to do more at our borders, and people have to stop employing illegal immigrants.
Wow. That's a little bit different than the song she's singing today. How about 2014 Hillary Clinton, not so long ago, when it comes to matters like turning away families at the border, separating parents from children for the purposes of processing in or out?
Two quick points. One, the numbers are increasing dramatically. And the main reason I believe why that's happening is that the violence in certain of those Central American countries is increasing dramatically. And there is not sufficient law enforcement or will on the part of the governments of those countries to try to deal with this exponential increase in violence, drug trafficking, the drug cartels. And many children are fleeing from that violence.
Should they be able to stay here? It's safer.
It may be safer, but that's not the answer. I do not.
Should they be sent back?
First of all, we have to provide the best emergency care we can provide. We have children 5 and 6 years old who have come up from Central America. We need to do more to provide border security in southern Mexico.
They should be sent back now.
Well, they should be sent back as soon as it can be determined who responsible adults and their families are, because there are concerns about whether all of them can be sent back. But I think all of them who can be should be reunited with their families. And just as Vice President Biden.
Yeah, there you go. And now yesterday, 2018, Hillary.
Well, she tweeted what's happening to families at the border right now is a humanitarian crisis. And then she took to the lectern.
Separating families is not mandated by law at all. That is an outright lie.
Mm-hmm. And she wasn't alone. I mean, Laura Bush had that op-ed in the Washington Post. Yeah. Michelle Obama retweeting it saying sometimes truth transcends party. So all of the former first ladies are upset with the separation, the zero tolerance policy.
Yeah, and Hillary Clinton played a theologian, too, which is always fun. It's almost as much fun as her on the Emmett Pettus Bridge talking about I ain't in no ways tired, you know, aligning herself with the civil rights movement. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Heather McDonald, contributing editor for City Journal, author of The War on Cops, and has opined in City Journal on this topic. I want to get her thoughts. Heather, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan and Amy.
So what about this heartless policy that's been advanced by the Trump administration and articulated by Jeff Sessions, humanitarian crisis? unconscionable to separate parents from their children and the like?
Well, it's Hillary Clinton, her more recent statements is just mushy thinking, and I would say that about Laura Bush and Michelle Obama as well. The fact is that allowing this type of deliberate breaking of the law, using kids as hostages, I mean, they are playing the child card to the hilt, increases ultimately suffering in the world. You have an incentive now for adults, whether they're the parents or not, because there's well-documented stories of basically rent-a-child services to get a child as you're crossing the border to make a ungrounded claim for asylum. If you reward that by saying that, yes, we're carving out an exception to our immigration laws for adults who bring a juvenile with them, you're going to get more of that, putting children at risk and creating a situation of chaos that is good for nobody. So what's going on now is a consequence of adults' decisions. They are the ones that are responsible for separating their children, if it is their children, not the federal government. They're the ones who made the decision to come into the country illegally, knowing that the consequences, in most cases, is a deportation at the border.
Well, do you think the president, though, is going to flip on this? Because I don't think this is the reality TV show that he wants to be a part of. And you have a growing number of Republicans that are against it. Even, you know, Ted Cruz, Paul Ryan, John McCain, Lisa Murkowski. I mean, people want this to stop. And both bills now address kids being separated from their parents, the conservative and the moderate bill before Congress.
Yeah, sadly, Amy, I do think the president will flip. I don't think he has particularly deep principles or a deep understanding of how the law works and how the enforcement of the law works as a deterrent. I think he is absolutely a weathercock and will change according to the sense of whether the media and is movable on this or not. But I support those within his administration, such as Jeff Sessions and Stephen Miller, who realize that taking a short-term response to this, looking at pictures of children crying on the border, is not the way to make policy. The way to make policy is fair and neutral rules and enforcing them fairly and neutrally and not carving out exceptions. To me, what is the most astounding thing is not really the flip-flops of Hillary, because, you know, frankly, any party in power is going to exploit, or an out of power is going to exploit the tools available to it, but it's why the left is so determined to get residents of third world countries, people of color, into the U.S. in the first place, because the left is the body of activists and professors and journalists who are telling us nonstop that there is no more bigoted, misogynist, oppressive, racist place on earth than the United States. You have Ta-Nehisi Coates saying that the very DNA of America is the destruction of black bodies. You have every academic saying that, you know, to be a college student, a female college student, is to experience a tsunami of sexual violence, and that America is a rape culture. So why are they so determined to bring in people, whether it's females who, if you believe the left, will simply be exchanging a local patriarchy for the United States one, or if it's blacks, will be exchanging their purportedly Pacific, you know, calm, civil peace, ridden country for one that is out to destroy them. The left is completely hypocritical in its open borders mode, which contradicts its America as the source of all evil mode.
Well, but they obviously, you know, why they want to do that, why they're willing to endure that paradox is because they want that electorate here, and they want to make America into some third world, you know, socialist authoritarian regime, apparently. That's certainly the philosophy that you hear on college campuses and from some of the assorted coalition partners of the left you described.
That is absolutely their agenda. I completely agree. Nevertheless, they turn on a dime and drop the rhetoric of racial victimology and oppression in order to then say that America is the only source of opportunity and hope, and you know, portray us as this beacon of openness when they want to shoehorn as many of these left leaning third world low skilled people here that will demand greater government and transform the culture.
Well, the thing that's remarkable to me about this is I understand that, you know, politicians are going to demagogue issues, then are going to play the sentimentalism game and use, you know, emotional examples to move popular opinion. But the reflection of the rule of law and actually the laws on the books is completely absent from media coverage. So, for example, the Flores consent decree from 1997 says unaccompanied children can only be held for 20 days. A ruling by the Ninth Circuit extended this 20-day limit to children who come as part of family units. So even if we want to hold a family unit together, the government is forbidden by law from doing so. So we're talking about 20 days, and you cannot hold a family unit together by law. And that is almost nowhere in the coverage of this story.
Yeah. It's pure, it's like watching sort of communist propaganda in action. They are going completely for the emotions. I mean, it's just hilarious to see the coverage on MSNBC and CNN. They know they have, for them and for much of the country, a winning issue, and they have the bit in the teeth, and they are running with it with as much maudlin coverage as they can. And you know, it's sad that so many otherwise conservative politicians are buckling under on this. It just shows, you know, it seems like the race card is the most powerful thing you can play, but I think perhaps the child card trumps everything else.
So there's two bills before Congress. Do you think the Democrats are going to move on any of this?
I think they have power. I think that at this point they'll probably hold out for as much as they can get as far as an amnesty and DACA. You know, I don't know whether this, you know, it was foreseeable and shouldn't have been undertaken. I support Jeff Sessions so much. I think he's the most important person in the Trump administration. He is absolutely determined to restore the immigration rule of law. Whether, however, this was a crisis that was foreseeable and they should have somehow avoided it because of knowing the melodramatic possibilities is hard to say.
In your column, you address an area where Sessions was criticized specifically, as he has been generally, on immigration enforcement, the idea of not granting asylum to alleged victims of domestic violence. You argue that makes perfect sense. Explain.
Well, yes. The whole concept of asylum is that you are granting it to individuals who are persecuted by their government for membership in a socially distinct group. The idea is that if you're under a persecuting government, there is literally no escape. And as a humanitarian gesture, we're going to reach out and give you some sort of relief from that. But domestic violence is not a government issue. It's a private crime. And it simply does not fall under the traditional understanding of asylum. This is something that has been pushed by the feminists as a way to get more third world people of color in. And it has been grotesquely exploited. I mean, the asylum claims have increased 1,700% over a 8-year period because people are bringing these trumped up charges, and we now have a backlog in the immigration courts of 300,000 that is bad for everybody. There are legitimate asylum seekers who are not getting justice.
Right. Of course. Exactly. Heather McDonald, contributing editor for City Journal, author of the book The War on Cops, her most recent piece at city-journal.org, America the Horrible? Heather, thanks so much for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan and Amy.
And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, I'm still kind of hung up on who's going to command Trump's Space Force.
All right, I'll give it a try.
No, try not. Do or do not. There is no try.
It's inscrutable, but I think Yoda should have some sort of consultant role for the Space Force. I mean, it's, you know.
I can't stop hearing Space Ball, Space Force. Maybe get Mel Brooks to do something.
So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the stupidest combination I ever heard in my life. That's the kind of thing an idiot would have on his luggage.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Trying to get past the sentimentalism of the immigration debate, particularly the policy of separating children from their parents who come to this, attempt to come to this country illegally, is difficult. It's difficult to kind of lay it bare. So I'm going to defer my time to Mark Stein, who was on with Tucker yesterday. And I thought he provided a nice little contrast between what Americans were required to do and what those attempting to come here illegally are required to do, at least as so desired by the left. And plus, he has a British accent, so he sounds more sophisticated.
Well, which is it? This is a country that is supposedly on orange alert. Over half of the illegal aliens present broke into a country on orange alert. That is to say, they've come here since 9/11. Americans shuffle like a bovine herd through security that demands to know the consistency of their pumpkin pie if they're flying home to Thanksgiving from New York to Cleveland. But the rest of the world is entitled to walk across the Rio Grande if they happen to have a little moppet in tow with them. You can't have it both ways. Right now, Americans are living on orange alert if they make a domestic flight, but their borders are open. You're the chumps of the planet for going along with it.
The chumps of the planet. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Rich Lowry, the editor of National Review, nationalreview.com. Rich, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Is Mark Stein right that we're the chumps of the planet under this current construct?
I don't think this is a security issue so much. I think these are mostly harmless people who are coming here because their countries are terrible and they think they'll have a better future here. Correctly, their countries are terrible and they would have a better future here.
Right.
But we have laws. I don't think it's in our interest to have people defy those laws en masse or to welcome these people into our country. We should be much more deliberate about who's coming here. But we have this screwy system that's insanely self-defeating that starkly pits humanitarian considerations against enforcement. And that's all our doing. You know, people see the situation on the border, and I think someone told me Greg Gutfeld said this on Fox yesterday. Well, why can't we just hold them together and then bus them back home? You can't do it. You literally cannot do it because of the way the rules are set up. Once someone says, I want asylum, the initial interviews, they're really waved through to the next part of the process, even if they're not likely to succeed. And then once you're at the asylum claim begins, in the best scenario, it's going to take 2 or 3 months to adjudicate it, and you can't hold a kid that long. So the choice the administration has is either to release the fit these family units together into the country, perhaps never to be seen again, probably never to be seen again, right, or to separate them. And that's just a terrible choice, and that's something we're doing to ourselves.
But why in the 6 weeks have this, you know, has this happened? Because of the zero tolerance policy? I mean, what were we doing before where people weren't held in these like essentially these camps.
We were releasing them all into the country. Okay. So if you showed up with a kid, you were getting into the country, and you were never leaving the country. So that created enormous incentive to show up with a kid or to send the kids alone, which, I mean, is a horrific thing to consider, that you'd send your child, mostly teenagers, you know, not younger minors, on this month-long dangerous journey. But they knew they showed up here, they'd get in as well. So that's the thing that has to stop. If we're ever going to cut off the flow, you have to convince people, no, they're not getting in. And what happened was the administration said, we're going to have a new zero-tolerance policy. We're going to prosecute everyone who crosses illegally, even if they show up with kids. And as soon as you prosecute them, they become briefly part of the criminal justice system. They're transferred into the custody of the U.S. Marshals. The U.S. Marshals are not in the business of child care. Just U.S. Marshals were anywhere across the country in any circumstance. They don't take care of your kids. So then the kids go into the care of HHS. And in theory, this should, you know, it's a misdemeanor offense. People plead guilty. They sentence to time served. And then they're deported, and they should be reunited with their kid, like in 5 days or so. The thing is, they'll claim asylum, which, is, as I said, extends the process. And it appears that the system down there, as far as we can tell by the reporting, which is, you know, hysterical and misleading in a lot of instances, but, you know, there's some truth in it as well, appears to be overwhelmed. So your kid's taken from you, and you don't know what's going on, and you don't know how to hook back up with your kid. And there was a case that the New York Times reported on the other day where a woman, I believe from Guatemala, was deported without her 8-year-old son. And that just shouldn't happen. The administration thinks that shouldn't happen. They should be what an ideal system. They come across the border illegally. They are detained together. They are deported together. Well, it shouldn't be hard, but you need Congress to change these screwy rules.
Yeah, and then NPR reported, too, that a guy from Honduras, a man, a father, hanged himself because he couldn't find his family members, and he was just so distraught. So
yeah, I haven't looked into that one specifically, and my position now, I have radical doubt about all these horror stories. I don't doubt that actually happened, but you know, I'd want to know more about that actual case and about his history. But there's no doubt, look, this is a significant moral cost to this policy and a significant downside. And I think the people I talk to in the administration consider it a downside and want Congress to kind of fix it so they don't have to do it this way. But there's no doubt that it's just we've created a system that's so insane. It's either don't enforce our laws or do this, and there have to be and there are better options.
Well, right, and commentators on both the left and the right have suggested this is, you know, a real moral cost to be paid for these images and these anecdotes that are being projected around the world, a moral cost to be paid for America. But you argue in a recent piece that you wrote in National Review about this topic that there's a significant moral cost to not enforcing the border as well. What's that?
Well, I mean, one, we're bringing in people that we wouldn't choose to bring in. I mean, I think they're well-meaning, they're desperate, my heart goes out to them. But if we just let everyone come in who shows up, we would just be swamped by people we wouldn't be able to absorb, one. Two, just more specifically, you've created this incentive, perverse incentive, to bring kids. And you actually have stories of, you know, kids being kind of rented out to traffickers, people posing as the parents of kids. The kids have become chits in this game because if you show up with a kid, you're in. That's it. And they know it. They know this. You know, these are rational actors, these migrants. They balance the various incentives. And when Trump first got elected and everyone thought, you know, oh, this because of his rhetoric, oh, there's going to be this massive deportation force. It's going to be the worst thing we've ever seen. The flow stopped. Because they just didn't want to deal with this, that, and they didn't think they could get in. But then slowly the word got out that actually no matter what the president says or what the rhetoric is, the policies haven't changed, so you're still going to get waved into the country. So they actually, a lot of them, they surrender to a border agent directly at the border. They're not even really trying to evade them. And then the system is such that they get into the country, and the numbers of folks in the administration tell me the numbers of family units that have been deported once they're in the country is statistically insignificant. It really can't be measured. So once you're in, you're not going back.
I wanted to get your take on another topic with Christopher Wray and the DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz testifying before the Senate yesterday. your colleague at National Review, Andy McCarthy, made the point that Horowitz established essentially that Comey was on a political timeline for his investigation into the Hillary email matter. And that's not a good policy for an investigation. It shouldn't be driven by electoral politics. But it seems the top line yesterday was Horowitz saying that they are indeed investigating and will produce a report on Comey's handling of classified information. So it doesn't look like Comey's going to get the same treatment that he gave Hillary.
Yeah, so Comey is a political operator. I mean, that's just what he is. He knew, as my colleague Andy McCarthy has demonstrated at length, he knew what Barack Obama wanted. He wanted this case to go away, and so he's going to do it. So he was sort of working backwards to that end result. And I think with President Trump, if things had gone differently, Comey would be perfectly happy still working in the Trump administration. You know, he would have danced around some things. He would have kept his memos to cover himself if something went wrong. But this is a guy who wanted to be in power above all and was self-interested and also interested in the image of his particular agency over anything else. So instead of just following the procedures and letting the chips fall where they may and letting Loretta Lynch make the decision to do what Barack Obama wanted, he did it himself, and that was wrong.
And wouldn't it be delicious irony if he was the one that ends up getting prosecuted?
Yeah, I don't take any joy in anyone being prosecuted.
A little
but,
bit.
You know,
come on, a little bit. A little.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander, especially, you know, Andrew McCabe. If we're going to nail,
yes.
Mueller's going to nail people to the wall for lying to the FBI, who worked tangentially for the Trump campaign, well, then let's have that standard apply to everyone.
All right. He is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, Fox News contributor, and the author of the book Lincoln Unbound, his recent piece on the immigration policy you can get at nationalreview.com. Rich, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The answer.
Dan and Amy, a couple of new TV spots we want to talk about. One, still a primary, Minnesota's primary. I don't think it's until like the second week of August. This
yeah,
dude
to fill it's state senate seat, Al Franken's old seat,
U.S.
Right?
Senate seat,
U.S. Senate seat,
right?
Well, yeah. This guy's kind of got the stink on. Like one eye's going this way and the other guy's going this way.
Richard Painter.
He's a little off.
He is the dumpster fire putter outer.
Some people see a dumpster fire and do nothing but watch the spectacle. Some are too scared to face the danger. Or they think it will benefit them if they just let it keep on burning. Others shrug and say, oh, all this talk of a dumpster fire, it's just fake news. There is an inferno raging in Washington. But here in the land of 10,000 lakes, we know how to put out a fire.
I'm Richard Painter. And yeah. I approve of this message.
Rawhide! We got a fire!
That's his real voice, everybody. He does
yeah.
Sort of like, honey, I'm home! Where's my chicken pot pie?
He kind of has a little bit of like a Charles Bronson death wish thing going on, too, in terms of how he addresses the camera.
He wants to win. He's not shy about it. And then we have a new one by Governor Rauner, as you say, former Governor Bruce Rauner.
And it features Spalding on the pot.
Yeah, someone's taking a deuce.
Chicago's porcelain prince of tax avoidance, J.B. Pritzker. Pritzker spent millions on his second Gold Coast mansion, then took out the toilets. To dodge hundreds of thousands in property taxes, Pritzker removed every single toilet from his multi-million-dollar second home and claimed it as uninhabitable. A royal flush of tax avoidance. Porcelain Prince J.B. Pritzker. Lower taxes for him, higher taxes for you.
And then it ends with a J.B. lookalike, of course, wearing a suit, sitting down on one of the toilets that were removed from the home with a newspaper in front of his face.
Yeah.
Inferring that he's not, you know,
I like,
you know what he's doing.
I like Porcelain
boom, boom,
Prince. No, he's out in the front yard.
Well.
I like Porcelain Prince. I like that. But now, to be fair, you know, he probably goes to the bathroom in the first home because he doesn't want to stink up the second home. So.
But it's really effective. I mean, they show these construction or these workers carrying the toilets out, and they look exasperated. And one guy's a toilet seat around his head, you know, like a lay.
Yeah.
It's funny. I think it's good.
It's a fun commercial. Yeah.
I mean, why not? But throw everything against the wall, see what sticks.
Oh.
Oh,
jeez.
Too soon.
Oh.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
They got the beat, the campus beat, the campus beat. Yeah, the campus beat.
Good morning, Dan and Amy.
Wow, it's still a little pitchy.
Yeah, it's nice.
The camp is beat.
He can't go where Belinda Carlisle goes. I mean,
well,
give him a
many
break.
Can.
That's true. Missouri, you've got a relative at Missouri, right?
Mizzou, yeah.
Yeah.
Two, yes.
It must be lonely for her on campus.
Why?
Between the fall of 2015 and 2017 semesters, freshman enrollment dropped by 35%.
Oh.
Lost tuition accounts for $29 million of the university's current $49 million budget shortfall. Last week, the school announcing it's going to have to eliminate 185 positions on top of the 308 it cut last year. And what was the triggering event for all this? Antipathy towards free speech. The football players walking out. The whole Black Lives Matter, campus up for grabs.
Parade, ban.
Yeah.
And then, you know, surrounding the president of the university's house. Went on and on. And then they camped out for days. Remember that?
That's right. And now they're still trying to bail water. They've adopted the University of Chicago principles to, you know, to kind of recast themselves as pro-free speech.
They're getting rid of ACT and SAT scores for admissions?
No.
Oh.
The statement of principles about free speech.
Oh, okay.
And they've also retained a seven-figure outside PR firm to help rebrand and reimage the college. So it's just nice to see, not that I'm rooting against Missouri specifically, it's just nice to see consequences attached to bad acts and parents and kids actually saying, nope, that's not an environment that I want to be a part of for my college education. So perhaps that'll be a cautionary tale and a warning to other universities, including my alma mater. Probably
Northwestern.
Probably not, but for some. But the real question I want to ask in this installment of Campus Beat is, do we have a crisis? You have two boys.
I do.
Their names are Peyton and Eli.
They are. Peyton's, this is his last day at school today,
yeah.
Elementary. He's been there for 11 years. He was in the pre-K for 2 years, so he started there when he was 3 years old.
And now he's like 8 feet tall.
Now he's 6'3", and today's his last.
6'3", eighth grader.
And he's got a size 16 shoe. He's not done growing yet.
And you don't have a basketball in his hands.
No, I don't, but I have volleyball.
That's child abuse.
Volleyball is not child abuse.
I'm not even acknowledging you said volleyball.
Volleyball. At least he's not playing soccer, Dan.
Well, it's not a sport. We wouldn't be.
Eli's
talking,
a great
I'm
soccer
talking
player.
About sports.
Oh. I can't even believe you're not into the World Cup.
Basketball anymore. And Pete Maravich daily drills. Every day for the next 4 years. Then I'll pick them up. I'll represent them. And we'll skip college. We'll get them right to the NBA. I'll cut you in on my slice.
Oh well, thank you, Dan.
Yeah, all right.
Gosh, you're so kind of you.
So the reason I ask about this crisis in the education of young men in higher ed is our friend Mark Perry over at Carpe Diem blog at AEI, who regularly posts on this topic. Really good stuff. Notes the bachelor's degrees for the class of 2016 by field and gender. The top line, 57% of all bachelor's degrees were earned by women. There's a 20-point spread.
Okay.
25.6 gender gap, gender college degree gap for men. 134 women graduating from college for every 100 men. And so do we have, is this like a national crisis that needs to be addressed from a policy perspective? Because if the statistics were reversed, wouldn't we be talking about what are we doing to help young women get into college, get their bachelor's degree? We need to provide more financial support. We need to do a better job at the K-12 level and all of that. Is any of that conversation happening, generally speaking, with respect to young boys as they grow into young men and look at college? I don't really hear it. Here's something that's interesting. The women earn the large majority of degrees in the health professions, psychology, education, English, and communication. Yes. Men earn the majority of degrees in just a few areas, but they're the hard sciences, engineering, computer science, and then also theology. All right. Here's something else interesting. Google, right, since they fired James Damore over his diversity memo, the female share of computer science degrees, 19% in 2016, is the same as the female share of Google's tech jobs, 20%. The female share of Google's non-tech jobs, 54%, just slightly higher than the female share of business bachelor's degrees, 47%. So, you know, the idea that these virtue signaling companies are doing something so profound in advance of diversity for its own sake, they're not, because they're in business to make money and have talented people. And so the actual quality of work product and critical thinking skills is what drives their decision making, despite all of their paeans to leftist orthodoxy. Just very interesting. But the crisis in higher ed for men, is it a crisis? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Bob and Waukegan, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, first off, I'd like to eliminate terms as a president so that Donald Trump can serve like four consecutively now.
Oh,
and to get to the issue at hand, Missouri lost 305 people they got rid of last year, and you said 185 this year?
Yeah, they're 185 they're cutting this year, yeah.
So they should just take those positions and they should fill them with down the line conservatives, and their tuition problems would be straight over.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call, Bob. I'm sure the National Association of Scholars would agree with you. Sean from Elmwood Park.
Another Trump conservative, I'll tell you what. I absolutely love it. Maybe the University of Missouri should become the recruiting center for the Trump Space Force, and they could wear those silver jumpsuits with the beam me up, Scotty, and then the Trump conservatives, they'll love them again. Because what I love about this willful ignorance of these buffoons, the kind of guy, you know, let's get rid of the terms, we need more Trump power. I would love, and I don't just mean profit, and you're missing the big picture here.
Oh, of course I am.
Think about the politicians and the inside trading scams and the purchase orders that can be generated from a Pentagon that right now spends $7,000 for a toilet seat. How much you think it's going to cost to put together the Space Force, brother? Both the politicians and their lap dance staff, they're all going to make trillions. It's going to be great. And then we could ask all these Trump Krishnas with their hats on and they're banging the tambourine. Maybe Obama, what would have happened if in 2010 Barack came out with Michelle on his arm and said, you know what we need here, people? We need a Space Force. We could have seen the same people who support it and their heads blow off. All Obama needed was Sean Hannity banging the pom-poms
okay.
and the tambourine.
All right. Thank you for that stream of consciousness that is completely off topic. Sean from Elmwood Park.
But he said it with conviction.
Of course he did. Ralph and Rantoul.
Yeah, good morning. Well, Space Force is one thing. I think the schooling thing is another. It's all kind of put together. Maybe there's an oxygen deficiency someplace near Sean's place of calling. But
well, perhaps
when it comes to, you know, Missouri, what I find in most of my classes, I don't care whether it's undergrad or grad school, the majority of students are female, and especially black males are underrepresented. So, you know, it could be that they're out working and wives and girlfriends are going back to school. I don't know. I don't delve into that. But I know that when I do see black males in my classes, they tend to be really serious and not frivolous at all. So, you know, more of them would be great.
Thanks for the call, Ralph. And I mean, you know, and this also gets to the topic we talked about yesterday with the head of the Asian American Education Concern. About trying to address some of this racial composition of, for example, Harvard University by punishing people who succeed so that and elevating people with inferior academic credentials a inferior academic record just to fit, you know, their vision for what a diverse student body looks like. And so this is also going on, and this is also something where there's a bit of a rebellion bubbling up in the Asian American community, and good for them. It's long overdue. But this is what the left does, is punish success. And this is part of the conversation about the distribution in higher education, too, and is it being artificially rigged for some groups against other groups to the detriment of all groups, putting people in positions where they can't succeed, which is something Thomas Sowell identified 25 years ago in his book Inside American Higher Education. Mike in Park Ridge.
Yeah, hi. I don't know about the University of Missouri, but at the University of Illinois, we care about one black student. His name is E.J. Liddell. He's going to play basketball at the University of Illinois. That kid is the real deal. Okay. I watched him pin a shot to the top of a backboard.
Wow!
Against my Moline Maroons in the Sweet 16. The kid is unbelievable. He's coming to the University of Illinois.
All right. Well, very
thanks
excited.
For the sports
thanks
update.
For the call, Mike. And the Illini will still miss the tournament.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, I've figured out why you're an egomaniac.
Why I'm an egomaniac?
Yeah, I figured it out.
Wow.
You want to know why?
Yeah, oh, I
it's not your fault. It's not
oh,
your
it's
fault.
It's my
Don't
parents'
blame
fault?
Yourself. No. You do yoga.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Namaste.
Exactly.
Chaturanga.
Yeah.
That's what I miss most about Jake Arrieta in the outfield when, on days he was pitching. He used to do downward dogs and chaturangas. I mean, it's so hot.
Right. So here's
in a Cubs uniform.
Here's the thing. Yoga, this kind of supposed to be consistent with the Buddhist philosophy of ego quieting, but it actually has the opposite effect, according to new research. And this probably does not come as a surprise to anybody who's seen,
yes.
You know,
has seen what? This thing we call exercise so that we can
no,
be healthier longer?
No, you know what
longer?
I'm talking about in the city, the kind of upwardly mobile, nose in the air types with their rolled up mats, walking around.
Isn't it great? They're rolled, sweaty. But they have that afterglow too, the yoga glow.
University.
You're just jealous of the guys with the man buns that do yoga.
Yeah,
with rolled up mats and the Lululemon shorts. Well,
this is a perfect example of what this study found. University of Mannheim in Germany recruited 93 yoga students over a 15-week period. They regularly evaluated the students' sense of self-enhancement after conducting yoga. They would have participants complete an inventory to respond to statements like, "I will be well known for the good deeds I will have done." How well those statements apply to them. At the moment, I have self-esteem. They also administer this kind of self-esteem scale. And students were evaluated in the hour after yoga class. They showed significantly higher self-enhancement on all three measures. The I will be known for the good deeds, I have self-esteem, and how they compare to others in their class. Everybody thought they were better than their classmates.
Well, they probably are because they probably stood up taller, which gave them, you know, some more self-confidence. Because in yoga, it's known that if you go to yoga, you can grow an inch.
Oh, my gosh. Second study, 162 people recruited through Facebook. Participants were asked to evaluate themselves based on statements like, in comparison to the average participant of this study, I am free for bias. I am free from bias. And again, the self-enhancement spiked following a meditation session when they hadn't meditated for 24 hours. Researchers found that people thought very highly, more highly of themselves and more highly of what they're going to contribute to greater society after doing yoga. So if there's a person who does yoga in your life, like there is in mine.
Namaste.
And they're insufferable sometimes. Now you have the science to back it up.
Oh, chaturanga.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.